Welcome to RainToday.com's podcasting series, Marketing and Selling Professional Services.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Rain Today's Marketing and Selling Professional Services podcast. I'm Michelle Davidson, editor of Rain Today. And today I welcome Kurt Mortensen. He's the author of the book Maximum Influence, The 12 Universal Laws of Power Persuasion, which was just released in its second edition. And Kurt is one of America's leading authorities on persuasion, negotiation, and influence. He teaches that professional success, personal relationships, leadership potential, and income depend on the ability to persuade, influence, and motivate others. So given all that, I invite him in to talk about how salespeople, independent professionals, and entrepreneurs can use persuasion to attract buyers to them. So welcome, Kurt. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
So first, congratulations on the new edition of the book.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think it was harder than I thought to do a second edition. It was interesting to see, you know, the changes in the market, changes in just in the economy, and to go back and verify and update the 12 laws of persuasion. So I'm excited to share with everyone the great way to persuade and influence.
Yeah, and the book has so much information and advice that's perfect for our readers. And when I was going through it and reading it, it was hard to single out just a few things to talk about, but I'm going to try. Hopefully we don't go too long here, but there's so much information in there. But first, I thought we'd talk about rapport and connecting with potential buyers. So what are some things people can do better to develop rapport with people?
Well, I think the first thing they can do is realize that they can do better. Because you know that annoying person that nobody likes? You know the person that kind of rubs you the wrong way? Have you met that type of person?
Oh, yeah.
You know, we've all met that type of person. I always tell people when I'm speaking or in seminars, I says, well, that could be you. Because people don't know if they're developing rapport. We all pretend to be nice. And it's what social psychologists call the woebegone effect, to where we tend to rate our skills, especially our people skills, higher than they actually are. In fact, 90% of all people rate their people skills as above average, and we've met enough people to know that that's not true. Mm-hmm. And so the key thing to realize is that when you look at connecting with people and understanding people, and I don't think I'm here to sugarcoat it, but here are the brutal facts, is that when people like you and trust you, you have a 90% chance of influence. When they don't like you and they don't trust you, you have a 10% chance. So this is a critical thing. Well, I've read about people skills. I've read this. I'm like, well, no. Are you applying it? Are you doing it? Are you that annoying person? And anybody can connect with people that are like them, their own personality.
Right.
But true persuaders can adapt and connect with anybody. And that's the thing what people don't realize with the new world of persuasion. We're not talking about closing skills. Because closing skills is like trying to get a kiss after a bad date, okay? If people don't like you and they don't trust you, it really doesn't matter if you have a clever phrase.
Yeah.
Because people's default setting, and that's one of the fun things that I get to do, is I get to interview and monitor and watch people try to persuade, and I get to interview the prospect after they said no, is the key thing to understand is that your default setting as a human is you tend to persuade others how you like to be persuaded. And that's wrong. You need to learn to adapt and understand and how to connect. And realize the big eye-opener for me when I started this research 20 years ago is that up to 95% of persuasion and influence involves a subconscious trigger, which is a feeling, right? You meet someone for the first time, and in 30 seconds, you've decided if you like them, if you trust them, right? It just happens. It's a feeling. It could be a smell. It could be a color. It could be your clothes. It could be how close you stand to them. It could be the words that you use. All matter. And you have to realize that you're not there to, you know, give them a list of features and benefits, but you're really there to connect. Because once you've connected and built rapport, the doors of influence swing right open.
Mm-hmm. And you say you have to adapt to what the other people like. So how do you do that when you're meeting someone for the first time? Are there clues? What do you do to start changing so that you meet what they like?
The biggest thing is being aware. For most persuaders, in fact, I believe everyone persuades for a living, whether you're a parent, teacher, leader, or manager, entrepreneur, we all persuade for a living, is to not be so concerned about, and here's the word I like to use, it might offend some, is to vomit all the benefits of your product or service versus truly listening and asking questions. Here's an interesting thing, is that introverts now out-persuade extroverts. Because extroverts develop resistance. Introverts listen and ask questions to become a consultant. So extroverts look like salespeople. Introverts tend to be more consultants. And we love to be consultants. We just don't want to be sold. So we can just take a moment and listen to their voice, look at their gestures, read them like a book, and understand that it matters. That's more important than any list I can give someone. Even though you have studied, you know, neurolinguistic programming and mirror and matching, that still works. The studies show that mirroring matching, not only their gestures, we've all heard that before, but mirror and matching their energy. If somebody comes in Monday morning and they haven't had their coffee and they've had a bad weekend and you come in, hey, it's a great day, let me persuade you, that'll be a disconnect. So if you could just take the time to read them, to understand that if you could find, you know, similarities that connects you with people, if you can learn to really adapt your people skills and situation, it'll go a long way with your ability to persuade and influence.
Okay. Now, when you're in meetings with prospects or clients, it's hard to keep their attention. You know, if they're not interested, they're checking their phone, their watch, anything else. So what are some ways that you can help them pay attention to you and not those other things?
That's a great one. Now, first of all, since we're in the non-sugarcoating mode, that's not the prospect's fault. That would be the persuader's fault. If they're not engaged, if they're not listening, if they don't care, that's not their problem. It's your problem, right? Because if they're not engaged, you can't persuade them. If they're confused, you can't persuade them because a confused mind says no. So at any time you've lost them, there's a series of things that you can do to kind of grab their attention. One is questions. Great persuaders ask three times more questions than the average persuaders because questions will always get answered. Now, it might not be, might be mentally. It could be, they might be out loud, but questions grab attention. That's a big one. Getting them involved through any type of asking them to do something, to write something down, to touch something, to try something out, to test drive something would keep them involved. The big one, though, and what I call the law of involvement, is realizing power of stories. When I interview prospects that have just been persuaded by a great persuader, it says, it was like listening to a movie. It was, I was engaged. It was easy to listen to. Stories are power. Because the moment somebody senses you're going to try to persuade them to do something, even though they need it, want it, like it, can afford it, they're going to resist you. So great persuaders help people persuade themselves. And what stories do is stories persuade without detection. So if they're not engaged and not enlisting, pull out a relevant story about someone who's in the same situation. Because what the prospect does is they put themselves in that situation and they're living it through the story and they're persuading themselves through the story. So instead of telling them what to do, you tell them a story that engages them and it keeps their attention. I mean, we've all been in presentations before. We're like, oh, story. And it just grabs our attention. And it's up to the persuader to make sure they're listening, they're engaged. Because if they're not involved, they're impossible to persuade.
Right. And one section I thought that was interesting, and I guess this is kind of related, is a section about words, words that repel, superior words, weasel words, and attention-grabbing words. So I was wondering if you could talk a bit about words you should use in sales and marketing and words you should avoid.
Well, the big factor here, of course, is being aware that every word you use, whether it's in a presentation, over the phone, in an email, will either attract or repel the prospect. That's critical for people to understand. We just talk and we don't think about the power of words and word choice and how we say those words. My favorite example is the airline. They're so good at packaging their words. You're sitting there putting on your seatbelt, the video presentation comes on, and they say, in the event of a water landing. Really?
Right.
They don't say when the plane crashes or anything else. Or in case of cabin depressurization, just say it nonchalantly. Basically, there's planes at 35,000 feet with a hole in the plane sucking everyone out, but that's verbal packaging. The plane's not late, it's delayed. The plane's not broke, it's mechanical difficulties. They don't lose your luggage that's misplaced, and it matters. It does matter. So when you look at sales, marketing, persuasion, whatever you do, be careful with the words. We don't say if, we say when. We don't say could, we say can. You don't transfer somebody to sales. That develops resistance. You go to a consultant. You don't ask for a credit card, it's a form of payment. You don't ask for an appointment because that has a bad trigger to it. That's 2 hours, that's too long. No, how about a time to visit? It matters. We don't use the word but because but negates everything in front of it. Instead of but, we can say however or and. There are a lot of power words out there using the words like facts. The facts show, the facts remain. And the biggest one the study shows, it's a subconscious trigger word, is the word because. Because when you're talking to somebody and you use the word because, it in their mind, subconsciously, you're giving them a valid reason. Even when it's not a very good reason, it still works. Like this one of the study I mentioned in Maximum Influence was a professor out of Harvard. His name was Elaine Langer. She studies word choices, and she went to the university library to try to cut in line at the photocopy machine. So she tried different words to see how many people would let her cut in line. There was 5 people in line. So the first time she says, excuse me, may I cut in line? I'm in a rush. About 60% let her in. The second time she says, excuse me, may I cut in line? Because I'm in a rush. So she only added the word because. It went from 60% to 94% compliance. Now here's where it gets really interesting. The third time around she says, excuse me, may I cut in line? Because I need to make some copies. Well, duh, why else would she be there? And it didn't even change. It was the same compliance rate. It dropped by 1%, and that wasn't even statistically significant. It matters. Every word we use matters. It's all part of what I call verbal packaging.
Wow. That's really interesting. Great. I think it's worth picking up the book just for that, for about words.
It is, because it's not something people think about. They just go on automatic pilot, and they don't think that one word could really repel somebody, because they use it all the time. It doesn't affect them.
Yeah.
Why would it affect the prospect?
Right. In the book, you also address how to handle objections, and you have 7 tips for doing that. Can you give us an overview of the 7 tips? We probably don't have time to go into everything in depth, but if you can give us an overview, that'd be great.
You bet. Now, the first thing to understand about objections is that, based on my studies, 67% of the time when you get an objection, it's a lie. Okay?
Really?
They're lying, it's too expensive, can't afford it, talk to a spouse. They're just trying to get rid of you. They just know that you're easy to get rid of. So the first thing to realize is, okay, is this a knee-jerk reaction or is it a valid objection? That's the first thing to do. Now, when it's a valid objection, you got to realize, okay, is this something that you can solve first of all? Compliment them. Because if you don't compliment them on the question, say, that's a great question, thanks for bringing that up. That shuts the door later on. Because one of the big complaints prospects have is that they feel stupid, or you get the look on your face like, really, you're asking that question. Remember, it's the first time they've heard your presentation, they've seen your product, you're going to get those questions. And the biggest complaint out of all of them is when it's such a simple thing, but a lot of people, they're all about time management. So a lot of persuaders hear the same objections over and over again, right, all the time, and so they have a great answer.
Mm-hmm.
So here comes that question, here comes that objection. So you cut them off because you know the answer, let's save some time. But the moment you cut them off, you've just gone from confident to arrogant. You've repelled them.
Mm-hmm.
And the door closes for persuasion. So even though you've heard it 100 times, 2,000 times, I don't care. Let them say it. It's the first time they voiced it, pause 3 to 5 seconds, and then reply. That alone will be gold as far as handling objections, being able to persuade them.
Very interesting. So there's one objection that our readers like to hear, or not hear about, one objection that they like advice about handling is a price objection. And you have a section about how to make price a non-issue in which you discuss the law of contrast. That is pretty interesting. I was wondering what people can do to increase their perceived value so buyers are willing to pay and they don't have to deal with the price objection.
Yeah, and price objection does come up. And realize, and again, as our non-sugarcoating mode here, is that when you hear it's too expensive, persuaders, you've blown your presentation. You didn't build the value. Because in a training situation, I'll hold up a $20 bill, okay, and I'll sell it to somebody in the audience for a dollar. So ultimately, someone will run up and give me a dollar for this $20 bill, right? And they sit down, and I say, well, hold on a second. Don't you need to think about it? Don't you need to talk to your spouse? Don't you want to go to my website? Don't you want to read my books? Don't you, you know, and what do they say? Well, no. Why? Because the value is there, and that's what we need to do with our products. When we can show them the return on investment, when we can show them that their $1,000 investment's worth $10,000, that's a no-brainer. It doesn't matter what the price is, and there's a variety of ways to do that. You can do the old sales technique, reduce it to the ridiculous. Well, what we're talking about is 3 cents a day. What we're talking about is a cafe latte a week. That puts in perspective if you have a product or service that lasts 3, 4, 5 years. you can do what infomercials do. It's called sweeten the pot. You know, they all, hey, but wait, there's more.
Yeah.
And they do that for a reason, because what a lot of people do is you say, here's what you get with your package. Here's all your stuff. That reduces the value of everything. Saying, well, no. Here's what you get, but as a bonus, you get this and this and this, and that adds value. And the study I used in Maximum Influence is a bake sale of all things, where people could, first day, they could buy a cupcake and two cookies for 75 cents and 40% bought. But here, listen to this. The next day, cupcakes were 75 cents, and when you bought a cupcake, you got a bonus of two cookies and 70% bought. So we need to be careful to add value. Don't put everything in one package. Just separate it. Well, you also get this, and there's the value. You get this as the value. That has a higher perceived value than putting it in all one lump sum. Because the persuaders, oh, you get all this stuff, but that doesn't have a perceived value to it. Hmm. And the other thing we can do is known as a door-in-the-face technique, to where we can start really high and adjust people's perception of time or even money. For example, this was done at a university where they were asking people to do surveys. So they went out to people and they said, hey, we do this 15-minute survey, and 25% said yes. So they just switched it around. This is what they did. Mm-hmm. Hey, we do a two-hour survey. No, I don't have that time. I got class. Well, can you at least give us a 15-minute survey? And it doubled, went up to over 50% of the amount of people that said yes.
Huh.
So sometimes if we could put the bigger perspective, that's why when you buy a dress, for example, it has all the previous prices on there so you can see the value. So persuaders can need to start as high or as low as they can in a negotiation or the price of their product or service to establish that value. And here's the other thing. Don't fight on price. Just build the value. Any rookie can fight on price. Let's build the value. Let's get the skills to show people the value of our product or service.
Well, that's fascinating information. I could listen to this all day long. So I think people should pick up the book and learn more. I think it's great. Thank you so much for joining us today. And before we leave, is there anything else you want to add?
You know, I'm obviously passionate about this because it was something I was kind of pretty mad I didn't learn in school or graduate school that makes such a big difference in life. I don't know if you've ever read Napoleon Hill, author of Think and Grow Rich. He studied hundreds of millionaires, and he said persuasion's the magic ingredient. And just have to think about how much money have you lost in your life and your business with your inability to persuade and influence. And I believe, especially for entrepreneurs and companies, that people have a moral and ethical obligation to persuade people. Because if you don't, somebody else with an inferior product, an inferior company, is going to persuade them and not give them the service or type of product that you could give them. That's the perspective I want people to take away, to really understand the importance of this. Everything you want in life is on the other side of persuasion and influence.
Well, great. Thank you so much, Kurt. Thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. I can talk about this all day long.
And a quick note to our listeners, if you'd like to learn more about Kurt's book, again, the title is Maximum Influence. You can find it on Amazon.com, and I'll have a link to it on this podcast page. And if you want to see where your persuasion skills rate, you can take the persuasion evaluation at persuasioniq.com. So thank you again, Kurt, and thank you to everyone for listening to today's Marketing and Selling Professional Services podcast.